Hello, and welcome to Building Sustainability Podcast. I'm your host, Geoffrey Hart, aka Geoffrey the Natural Builder. Building Sustainability consists of conversations with designers, builders, makers, dreamers, and doers, exploring the wide world of sustainability in the built environment by talking to wonderful people who are doing excellent things. Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 53 of the Building Sustainability Podcast. It is currently the 21st of July, 2021. This episode is a touch late. I said I was going to hurry up and catch up with the ones I'd missed, but it's been busy old times. I have been rushing to get the tiny house weathertight and get it all the membranes on and it all sealed up. Because we've had a lovely, wonderful spell of lovely, hot, nice weather in the UK here. And I have spent that very hot weather mostly being on a roof with nowhere to hide, sort of crisping myself just a little bit. But I am definitely not complaining. So yes, the tiny house is just about at the stage where it's entirely membraned. It's looking very much like a house. I have made the final few adjustments. I got about 90% of the design done in CAD. And then there was just things that I couldn't possibly conceive, like how much headroom I needed above the stairs. Because the stairs aren't really stairs, they're sort of more of a ladder. So I didn't know where the change in roof pitch should go. So I just had to build it. So then I spent probably 2 hours having mocked up where the edge of the mezzanine goes. I put a ladder up and then I climbed up and down the ladder at different pitches representing different possible staircases. And I moved the rafters in different positions and I bumped my head and then I moved them a bit more and then I climbed the ladder and I bumped my head again. I just got to feel it, I guess, like literally feel it. And clunk my head. Anyway, this is a waffly random nonsense. I am pretty tired. It's like 9:45. And I've been building all day. So what is there to know? First of all, the European Straw Bale Gathering is next weekend. So that is the quick Google. Is happening on Friday the 30th of July until Sunday the 1st of August. There are tickets available from the European Straw Bale Association website. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. I am doing a small section talking about clay and straw and how well they work together. I think I've got time to get that together. I'm sure it'll be fine. I will just be coming back from doing a nice earth floor. So I'll be fully in the clay zone. So yes, that's happening. Make sure you get along to that. As I've mentioned in the last couple of episodes, the Right to Roam, there's a mass trespass happening in Sussex on the Sussex Downs this Saturday. That is the 24th of July, 2021. Make sure you get along to that if you can, if you're in the neighbourhood. That is part of the campaign to try and get Right to Roam access to all countryside for people in the UK, not just people in Scotland. That was what Nick Hayes was talking about way back last summer sometime. So yes, get involved with that. What else should I tell you about? ACAN. ACAN are doing great things at the moment. They have got a natural building group. And last week they did an introduction to natural materials. That video is now online. So there's a link to that in the show notes. So today, Thursday, they are doing a special episode on straw. So make sure you get involved in that. That's a big Zoom call for everyone, free to attend. And I believe they're now going through all of the natural materials and talking about how to use them, pros, cons, considerations, that sort of thing. They're really great. Love ACAN. Do whatever you can to support them. Speaking of support, this is the final shout for the July special Patreon support for this podcast. This podcast is funded by me and it costs quite a bit. And takes quite a lot of time. So the Patreon site It's just a way that people that can afford a little bit extra can give a bit of money towards the podcast and keep it free for everyone else. So I think that's quite a nice little system. So yes, as an incentive for July, I have got some big old prizes. There's shrink pots from John Mullaney, beautiful, beautiful coloured shrink pots. There's spoons from Dave Cockcroft, Dave from episode 2 of the podcast. My man Jeff Hannis has turned on a foot-powered lathe a beautiful, beautiful maple bowl. And then Isla Middleton, who is a wonderful artist, she has done a poster on summer foraging. It's a beautiful lino cut poster. So all of that can be won by, will be won by someone who joins up in July. So if you want to be in with the chance to win, then go to patreon.com/buildingsustainability. Okay, enough of that waffle. What do I need to tell you about this episode? It's a chat with Phil Christopher. I have known Phil Christopher for a number of years when I was on the board of SBUK, Straw Building UK. We organised the big straw bale gathering together. Yeah, he's a thoroughly good chap. This episode, he tells us all about what he's been up to, all the hard work he's been doing, and we chat about various other things. This episode even wanders a little bit into talking about football. Some people might have been aware of the European Football Cup Championships. Somehow we end up talking about that, even though neither of us really understand football. So listen out for that. What else to tell you? Oh yeah, there's about 20 minutes. I haven't actually edited it yet, so it might be less than that. But I think there's about 20 minutes of extra audio from this conversation with Phil. Another reason to get on the Patreon is to hear that bonus audio. And is that all I've got to say? Oh, I should say there's a few clunky edits in here. There was a bit where Phil's phone rang, a phone that he didn't even know was connected. Yeah, various connection issues. So, yeah, if it sounds clunky, I apologise. We're just doing our best, aren't we? Right, well, that's it from me. I'll be back at the end. Enjoy Phil Christopher.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But the last time we did hang out was on your build in Dartmoor.
Yes, at Totnes, yes.
That was an experience.
No, it was challenging weather-wise.
It was challenging weather-wise, and I think everyone tried their absolute best to make it work.
They did.
But things just didn't quite line up, did they?
No. The effort put in. It was amazing. Amazing volunteers who went there to do that. They were really, really good. Really, really committed and... Yeah, against all odds. the kind of weather that you expect in August, isn't it? You know, sort of like massive storm 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Rain like you've never seen before.
I mean, I don't think I've ever got wetter so quickly as that rainstorm that came in at lunchtime.
It was an object lesson in how a straw bale buildings need suitable weather protection in place.
Yeah.
And how difficult, you know, that can be to do, and, you know, just trying to work with what's there on site and trying to do your best with all of it. It was, it was a bit bonkers.
I felt for you, mate. So, and for the listeners, the roof hadn't yet been built. Through everyone's best efforts, it hadn't quite materialised, but the course to sort of get all the straw in was booked in months in advance.
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah, just the commitment of everybody that was there, the builder who'd been there doing the stuff, prepping in advance, and then I just went down on site to do the training, and it was a busy old couple of weeks.
Well, when I arrived, I only came down for a couple of days. I was, you know, in the neighbourhood, thought I'd come and visit, and
it was good to see you.
But yeah, it was when we were stood downstairs and you were talking about, you know, a nice detail on, you know, I think stuffing straw or something, and there was just water pouring through the ceiling, and it's like everyone stood around in like full waterproofs indoors.
That was funny because we'd had to. Well, I say it was funny. You know, looking back on it, you can laugh now. But that was interesting because we'd had. You know, it's one of those things that you get on straw bale builds all the time when people are doing a self build and people haven't done stuff before, and you know, you try and have input into those things to make them work properly, and you know, some things get lost in translation, and then you turn up and things aren't quite right. And actually, you know, the first thing that we did when we got there on site was. We made sure that all the weather, because it was two stories, wasn't it?
Mm.
You know? And we made sure that the middle beam between the two floors was properly weatherproof from above. And then when we had all that crazy rain, it was great. Stuff didn't really get wet. I've never seen water like it in a straw bale build before.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary. But it didn't come down into the walls because so perfect use of having a membrane there.
Yes.
To stop things coming down through, suitably detailed so that there were no gaps or whatever. And there was, there was in two or three places, there was a little bit of leakage, I think, but it was nothing considering the beam above it was just like absolutely full of water.
I remember you going around with the probe, the bale master, or the probe master, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. The protometer bale master. Yes.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, these bales should be sopping wet, but I think because you'd done very well and stopped the water getting in from the top, they were magically within tolerance.
It was an object lesson in detailing properly how you know, you've got to have proper weather protection when a straw bale building is just the most important thing, because even in the middle of August, you know, you just don't know what the weather's going to do.
Yeah. I mean, it was. I think that area of Dartmoor is sort of statistically the wettest bit of the country, maybe, or like
possibly. Yeah, it seems to change very rapidly.
It certainly
the weather
does,
and constantly. Yeah, going from brilliant sunshine to absolutely crazy rain.
Yeah,
and then, you know, well, it was literally four seasons in a day, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, and it was like, I think I got sunburn in the afternoon as well.
it's good to see challenges like that now and again.
Yeah. Do you feel like, I mean, you've had a big old couple of years of challenges, maybe that one was one too many, but
well, that was it. Yeah, because I feel like I just haven't really stopped for about 3 years at the moment, because of course, I had, where was that? So, like, 2018, we did worked on the build up at Fault Hall Organic Farm up in Market Drayton in Shropshire. Before that, I'd been working doing some rendering and stuff for some friends over in Poole in Dorset, and came back to that after because I had my hips replaced.
Oh, of course you did, yeah.
Yeah, so 2017, I had one hip replaced, and then had the second one done in 2018. 6 weeks, wasn't allowed to do anything. Went back to rendering and then went to Market Drayton. And then what happened then? Oh, we did a house build in East Coker in Somerset.
Okay, where's that?
It's near Yeovil.
Oh, right.
Okay. Right next to Yeovil, South Somerset. And amazing. That was the first thatched build that we'd worked on. It was a amazing sort of like graph axis sort of shape.
Yeah. What, like really a sort of bell curve type? Is that what you're...
Yeah, I don't really know how to describe it. It sort of like had a central sort of two-story bit, and then these two wings down each side. And a thatched roof, like it's a massive thatched roof, all the straw walls. And so like we got these amazing photos with just like when the thatch went on and the walls were done.
Yeah.
Just everything was straw. It was the most amazing thing to see.
Was it a straw thatch? They didn't go...
Yeah.
Oh, it's like a real traditional...
Yeah, great. Yeah, proper job. Yeah. So you just looked at the building and all you could see was straw. Everything on the building was straw. Yeah, that was very special.
Nice.
And I went back to see the folks whose build it was a couple of weeks ago, and it's doing really, really well.
Great.
It was exciting because Caroline, whose build it was, had these sort of connections with India, and she had a... this elephant sculpture, and I think in I'm not quite sure about the history of it, but I think elephants are a good luck symbol.
Okay.
And so we had this this carved elephant, and we mounted it in the straw bale wall. So like, we put some framing into the wall to replicate this in, made a little lead flash shelf and different things, and actually embedded. So when you look at the wall, you can see this amazing stone. It was quite a heavy thing. It was quite fun trying to put it in. So this elephant's in the wall next to the front door because that's where it's supposed to bring good luck, I think.
Lovely.
Aww. Yeah, that was good. And then from there to Hastings, of course, for the Upstraw Interreg project, which is now the new visitor centre for Hastings Country Park called the Bale House.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us sort of, why don't you introduce that project and like give us, start at the beginning.
Wow. I mean, the beginning, I mean, it's one of these sort of public sector projects where, you know, and I've never been involved with anything, a project that big before. And, you know, apparently we learned very quickly that, you know, a lot of public sector projects, whatever they are, just never happen because they're so complicated to get going and to get sorted out. And it was interesting. We first got involved with, of course, through Straw Bale Building UK, a group for promoting straw building.
I think we'll talk further on that.
So we went down to a meeting because we had some, we're a sub partner in the project, so we had some funding there to engage with that, to do some work on communications and different deliverables for Upstraw.
Upstraw's the European funding thing, isn't it?
Yes, so it's a northwestern Europe Interreg project, so with the European funding. And so this funding was made available, and the idea was that there would be five different buildings in five different countries by the end of the project. And Hastings Borough Council were a partner in the project to deliver the UK building, which was the Bale House, a new visitor centre for the Hastings Country Park. Out on the east side, up near towards Fairlight, in Hastings. And it's amazing. So it's a 216 square metres building itself, roof with a lot of overhang on it. So I think the roof's about 350 square metres. A big old building. And so it had gone through this process for, I think it had first gone into planning about 7 years prior, you know, went through various sort of iterations and different things. Got granted planning, and then they couldn't. I think they just couldn't find anybody to build it. It was one of these things where you know, we have these, obviously these challenges, which we tried to address with SBUK a bit about trying to do straw at scale, because obviously there aren't a lot of people who build with straw in the UK. We'd obviously all love to see more of it, so it was difficult to try and get to find people to build this building. The School of Natural Building were involved with it. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, they weren't able to build it. it went through a tender process with the council. We'd sort of, in SBUC, we sort of put our heads together and we were trying to work out if we could bring sort of a consortium of people together, of straw bale builders together, to try and do this thing at scale, so club together to actually be able to deliver a bigger project. But again, you know, it's difficult. The Hastings Borough Council have been absolutely amazing with this project, really, really good. And we sort of went to them and said, well, could we do this sort of approach? And we had to go through like another tender process. I think it was like the third tender process for this project.
Were there other people tendering as well, other companies?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, yeah. it's interesting because obviously everything has to be done, you know, all very transparently,
yeah,
of course, so, to make sure that things are done properly. So it's a... It makes you understand how difficult it is for small companies to be able to engage with those processes, because obviously big building companies have teams of bid writers and whatever to be mm-hmm. able to engage with these sorts of things and sort things out. And then you try to do it as you know, micro companies or individuals, and you realise how resource sapping it is to try yes. and go through and work all these things out, you know, just... all the specifications, you know, I've not really had a lot of contact with the, you know, the contract stuff, you know, the big proper important contract stuff. Trying to work out all the those things worked and translating all the clauses and everything into that. You know, it's really, really complicated.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, we got all that together. We were successful with the bid for the project, and so we went on to site in May 2019. So 2 years ago, amazingly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a fascinating project, because the idea was to build, as you know, we always have these conversations about what are the right materials to use in these buildings and how you make everything work and balancing out everything, you know, you know, from a carbon perspective and a resource perspective, and what's massively, you know, embodied carbon and energy mm-hmm. and all these different sorts of things. And so, yeah, we use some really interesting materials. So they use these recycled concrete blocks.
Okay.
So they're using like recycled aggregate into these blocks.
Do you know what sort of saving they get in terms of, sorry, I'm putting you on the spot here, in terms of like embodied carbon or anything like that?
No, it's one of these things where actually, now we've got to the end of the project, I just want to delve into a lot of it a lot more, because on the way through we just sort of had to crack on and get everything
yes.
sorted out.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously things were specified, and so we sort of put them into the building, and they were, you know, they worked really well, they looked really good. And it was interesting because, you know, people were you know, looking at it, and you're like, you know, it's like the kind of M&S, you know, these aren't just ordinary concrete blocks, you know, they're special concrete blocks. And,
yeah.
Because people look at it and think, oh, you know.
Just bog standard, isn't it?
There's going to be any concrete. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's quite easy for people to be quite dismissive at that point. You know, oh, call that eco-building.
Yeah, this is it, you know. And I think that, like I was saying about trying to find out the facts and figures of these things, you know, you obviously, I like to be a bit sort of geeky about those sorts of things, you know, if you've got the time to do it. And especially if you're specifying stuff yourself. Obviously, a lot of the things that we end up doing are sort of design and build to a point, aren't they? But actually,
definitely, yeah.
You know, which is a great way to do it, because then you know exactly what you're specifying and you understand all that stuff. But when you, so we were working with Liz Crisp from Cave Cooperative
mm-hmm.
for the design. And of course it was all there. So it's like translating that into what was actually going to work on site. And so we had to tweak various different things. So originally the building was going to be load-bearing straw.
That's a big old load-bearing straw building.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. And actually, you know, having worked with, you know, we've worked quite a lot with Hawkland, Chris and Dave
mm-hmm.
from Hawkland Ecological Construction, and we had this sort of they were using, in fact we first used it up at Fort Hall Farm. We did it was like two buildings sort of plugged together there, and we did half with standard load-bearing straw. And then we do it half with this sort of hybrid sort of timber frame infill approach, where you basically have everything that you have for load-bearing straw, but with more uprights. And so you can put that timber frame together and then fill the straw into the frame, compress it in, rather than doing this the standard sort of load-bearing thing. So, you know, it's sort of, you know, semantics really to a point. I mean, you end up with the same sort of structure. The straw's still there doing some structural stuff as well as the, you know, the racking and everything else. And so we had to use that approach there because the, I think it's 155 metres above sea level, basically on the edge of a cliff, pretty much. the highest point in the local area. You can see France from there. It's amazing. Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The weather, you could have the most amazing, beautiful, sunny days, and still it would be blowing about 60 miles an hour. The wind was astronomical, absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, quite often in cloud, you know, you'd just be, you know, sometimes you can, you know, literally see your hand in front of your face pretty much. It was just crazy. Really interesting from a, you know, running a site point of view. And just really, so really challenging. And so it would have been impossible, really, to have done, well, I think, I mean, certainly the way that I've done load-bearing, it would have been very difficult to have done load-bearing there because the whole structure was based around all these massive larch posts that we used, which took this massive, huge roof canopy, as well as sitting down on the walls. And these huge Douglas fir beams that we used, you know, sort of, you know, sort of 300 by 200 or whatever they were, which created this main roof structure for this building. So it's like a twin apex roof, but only with like a degree. Dual pitch roof.
Yeah.
With about a degree fall on it. It was nothing really. So you look at it and it looks flat, flat. So this huge frame, and so everything designed to the frame was designed to be visible from the inside. So all the timber is exposed. An extraordinary looking thing, but obviously a huge frame, a huge weighty frame. So we took the approach of doing the straw infill for it, and it worked really, really well. But the framing itself was massively complicated. I'd not really done a lot. I had never done anything with sort of post and beam stuff like that. You know, so it was a real eye opener. We got some really good people involved. Who were, you know, had skills in those areas. And so it was interesting learning all those techniques for, you know, sort of counterbalancing these huge beams and moving them carefully without injuring anybody and using like these wheel trolleys, you know, so that you can use these huge beams around. And literally we'd had this huge foam glass floor put in with a limeprete screed on top. So we had this lovely flat floor inside and then just used a genie lift to put these beams up into position, but it took an extraordinary amount of time.
Yeah, I bet.
To get the roof on. And so we were a bit delayed. And so the straw actually didn't go in until December.
Classic time to straw bale.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So again, and it was like the second sort of build in a row where, you know, because obviously people think, oh, you know, traditionally, of course, straw building on site is a summer activity, and quite rightly, because you want all that lovely dry weather and everything. But yeah, if you wrap carefully and detail it, then of course you can do it whenever you want, really. So a lot of solid sheet wrap around the building and all carefully sorted out, and the straw went in around it, and yeah, no, it works really, really well.
Nice.
Was
that a course you ran, or was it just professionals?
No, it was just professionals. Yes, it was just contract stuff. Mm-hmm. We had people come in and visit at different points to look at stuff, and we had actually the local college, we had some trips come in to show them the site and learn a bit about a building site and all these different sorts of things. And talking about the upstraw project.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was all contract. It was good. And we had just an amazing crew of people, so great. You know, it's like Hasper Zali, Jonathan Kalviak. Just so many people. Boise.
Of course, Boise.
The legendary Boise.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
You know. And just so many great people there. And lots of, you know, so lots of straw bale specialist people. Of course, Auckland came to do with the straw. We just had a great time all the way through. Apart from we got massively robbed, I think, but in October. Yeah, we had all our stuff on it. It was one of these things where it was quite, it feels like a really remote site, but it's actually quite close to sort of housing. It's not too bad, but in Fairlight Village. And it was like, what do you do with all the kit? So like, we had a massive container on site, you know, proper secure storage. And my big Luton van, we park it every day up against the container, you know, so like for extra layers of security with all the different, there was like 3 padlocks and different things and all this different stuff. And I think it was towards the end of October. Yeah, we came in one day and the van had been moved and they'd like used an angle grinder. It was interesting actually to see how easy it was to get into a container, because obviously you don't really think about it. You think, oh, it looks secure and it seems fine.
Yeah.
And then you realise that it probably took them all of about a minute.
With a battery angle grinder.
Just to literally chop everything off the container to be able to get into it.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, just absolutely cleaned us out.
Oh, mate, I feel so bad for you. I mean, I had all my tools robbed from my van, and I just remember... I remember, like, opening and shutting the door, thinking, like, when I look again, it'll just... Oh, there it is, behind the thing. And, yeah, I couldn't get it into my brain what had happened, and just, like... I'm sure it's, is it just round the back? Oh, no, it's not there.
Oh, it's just awful. Because, it's funny, you know, just literally, you're just that moment, you just like, you know, you just feel like just sick.
Yeah.
Because you just realise that you've been just absolutely cleaned out.
Yeah.
And, that was bad. That was a low point.
Yes.
So then there was like lots of, you know, because, you know, that's that classic thing, isn't it? You know, where it's like, you know, robbing people's tools is a pretty low thing to do, mm-hmm. because then you can't actually work, and you've then got to do. So there was then lots of frenzied tool buying, because we've moved quite a lot onto obviously trying to keep the site safe and stuff, and obviously all this amazing all the DeWalt, the 54 volt stuff, which we'd had, and Yeah, we had literally the week before I bought it, because I needed a big drill, because we didn't have whatever. So I bought like this lovely flex volt, sort of 54 volt.
You thought, I'm going to invest. I'm going to invest. Yeah. It's going to last a long time.
That's it. I used it once, I think, and then it went. Yeah. It was crazy.
I really feel for you.
Yeah, but that was challenging. The weather was very, very challenging. But actually that project, the whole thing, has just been made by the people on it. Mm-hmm. Mary Davidson from Hastings Borough Council has been absolutely brilliant. Liz from Cave has been absolutely brilliant. Mary Rawlinson, you know, we've been there working on it from Green and Castle. She's sort of been project managing everything. I've been sort of doing the build elements and different things. And of course, then last year COVID happened and everything else. So that shut us down from there. I think we were off site for 3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of first lockdown. So we pulled off that and went to build a. We had a self build project happening over in Shard in Somerset that we needed to build the frame for. And so came back on the first lockdown trying to. I don't know if you had this. I can't remember what you were doing at the time.
I'd just started at the wood project, so I was I was full-time employed and enjoying the furlough life for the first bit.
Oh, that's amazing. That's really, really good. I sort of realised that we had to build this frame, timber frame for Chard, so all the beams and everything else. Lots of frenzied calls to like board suppliers and lumber suppliers trying to find this timber. And then what do you do with it? How do you work, you know, because obviously construction, a lot of construction carried on, didn't it, with COVID and different things. And so we came back and switched on to that. But it's trying to do it safely. So I ended up getting a huge, like a massive pallet of OSB and a huge timber delivery delivered to my house. It was bonkers, absolutely bonkers, because I thought, well, we'll just build it in the garden.
Right.
And so ended up building the frame for the Chard house in my back garden. So fabricated all of that and then hired a truck and took it to site and put it up. And then
brilliant. So you're pioneering prefab.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously limited prefab. It's just the standard beam stuff and whatever. But yeah, not panels. Oh, that's just a whole subject in itself, isn't it?
Well,
love to be able to do that. That's just been on my list for 4 years to try and do some stuff with prefab.
Yes. Well, I keep seeing the EcoCocon, which seems I mean, it's the one that most people seem to be talking about. They seem to be, you know, plugging away. You know, the amount of builds in this country is still minuscule compared to on the continent.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, we actually had we did the technical design for a project in Wales, for an EcoCom project last year, which has gone really well.
Nice.
Again, the Hawkland were on site doing the actual construction elements of that. And Jonathan Davies, my designer, did the technical design package for it. So that was lovely to see that and sort of get to grips with that and have some contact with that, because we'd dealt quite a lot with George from EcoCom.
Good experiences.
Yeah, really good. I mean, it does seem to be a fantastic system. I'm not quite sure. I sort of overdue a conversation. Really, to try and catch up on all of that, and where things are going. I'm not sure where things sit now. It's this whole new world, isn't it, of not being in the EU anymore?
Yeah. Do you still love us, EU suppliers that we were friends with before?
Yeah, and how it's going to, you know, how it's affected cost and stuff. Mm. I don't know, and the implications for different things. But you know, obviously, it would be great if panels were being built in this country.
Yeah,
you know,
we should also say that other panel providers are available. In a true BBC style.
Yes, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, who is doing panels in the UK? I mean, Modcell.
Are they still doing them? I'm not sure. I'm actually speaking to Craig White soon. So I'm sure I'll find out. But
yeah, I mean, you know, Craig's a busy guy, isn't he? And so he's you know, he's got various different projects on, I think, and different things. So
that's one of the things I want to know. It's like, what are you actually doing? It seems like you're doing everything.
No, that's it. You know, and clearly, you know, as a company, they've really had it together, and you know, there's lots of research and funding and different things. And yeah. I mean, you just have to admire, you know, folk like that doing all those sorts of things. And it is, I think, it constantly comes back to, you know, again with SBUC, the members that we've got. You know, everybody's tiny. You know, we're all individuals, pretty much, or tiny companies, or. Trying to think how we solve some of these issues and get these things done, either through SBUC or with individual companies trying to do research and stuff. I mean, it's not easy to do because, you know, you're normally on site building, aren't you, and doing the grunt stuff. And that's certainly been the last 2 years with Hastings has just been, you know, just massively absorbed all of that time without being able to do a lot else, really. So I've got a huge list of things that I want to learn and understand and get done. It would be great, wouldn't it, to be? We did some, there's a group called Dorset Community Action down here where I am. And in 2017, we did, there was some research that I had a bit of input into, and we were trying to look at this idea that it sort of came from the point of view that, you know, obviously everywhere build a certain amount of houses.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's this issue of how do you, you know, in an ideal world, circular economy, localism, everything else, you'd want those materials and that labour to be as local as possible, you know, sort of probably winding the clock back to how a building was not such a long time ago.
Yeah.
Is it really? You know, the whole, what is it, throw a stick or a stone and hit the trees that you're going to build a house out of.
Is that a phrase?
I've literally mixed up several sort of phrases, I think.
No, we'll go with that. That's a classic.
It's definitely something. I think you definitely, isn't it, throw something and hit, you can hit the timber that you're going to build. Oh, I really don't know. Bonkers.
I know there was the thing in Wales, like if you, was it in Wales? Maybe it's the whole country, the whole of the UK. But if you could build a cottage overnight then and light a fire before dawn, then you could throw like an axe out of like in all four directions, and that where they landed dictated your bit of land.
That is brilliant.
I mean, yeah.
I've not heard that.
Have you not?
Isn't that's a health and safety issue, isn't it?
Oh, they use a special blunt rubber axe, the praxis axe. I think if you've just built a house overnight. Under the cover of darkness.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I wonder how.
Have you had to really prep for that?
I don't know.
Or how did that work? But that was a bit like the, you know, that reminds me, you know, the whole straw bale thing with the homesteading act, wasn't it? The whole, history of Straw Bale, and what was it, in Nebraska, wasn't it?
Well, tell us the story.
Well, I think the idea was out in the States or whatever it was at the time. I don't know what, you know, as people were settling out there.
Yeah.
I think that was it. In Nebraska, they didn't have, I think it's like a fairly barren landscape. They didn't have a lot of timber and different things. But the Homesteading Act, I believe, and I'm not a great expert on American history, if you could build a house, you know, you could claim a certain amount of land, you know, you put a house on it. But then what do you build houses out of? And they built houses out of turf, soddies, I think they called them. Mm-hmm. You know, they literally like dug sods out of the ground and stacked them up. And then as baling machinery was invented, sort of later 19th century, they started with, you know, hay and, you know, straw and different stuff. And yeah, so literally that's where I think that load-bearing approach sort of started.
Mm, well, it's generally called Nebraska style, isn't it? That load-bearing.
Mm. We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Mick from the Mick and Pat Show.
That's right, and I'm Pat.
Looking for a podcast that's like catching up with old friends? Well, you're in luck.
We're here to bring you weekly doses of lifestyle commentary, discuss culture and politics, and top it off with the occasional beer and film reviews.
But it's not just about us. We're a community. Our listeners are our kin, and we let you all have a say in what we discuss.
So saddle up and join the conversation at the Mick and Pat Show. You can check out our website or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you know, great, and there are still buildings out there, aren't there? You know, of a great age. It'd be lovely to go and see stuff like that. But yeah, I think that was the idea, wasn't it? That if you could build a house, that you could claim a certain amount of land, but there were no axes involved.
Well, that's why Wales is better than.
But there's probably presumably more people survived.
Yeah,
in Nebraska,
you get on better with your neighbours, not throwing axes at them.
It's good, yeah, but we're a long way away from being able to do that in England, aren't we? I think, you know, I did hear rumours that the again, all these things that I need to be able to catch up on now, hopefully, that I might have some time, the idea that obviously you've got with the One Planet development stuff in Wales, isn't there supposed to be a review of that going on?
Is there?
It may have already happened. I don't know. I think there was going to be a review at some point. Perhaps it hasn't happened yet, to see how it had gone and how it was working and different things. And
yeah,
I think I heard somewhere that there might have been, you know, this idea that England might look at it in some capacity.
I think when I spoke to Jana, she was saying that there was a few, it's sort of at council level, I think, that might take it on. And yeah, I mean, that's really exciting.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that could be a bit of a game changer, wouldn't it? There seems to be a lot of really sort of complicated stuff that's coming around. You know, all the right to build stuff and different things sort of seems to have thrown different councils into a state of flux, hasn't it? You know, trying to provide land and different things. And I think rules got changed, didn't they? Because, you know, the idea that you could build a certain, you know, not massively generous house, like a suitable house or a plot of land, and that the value of the land would be released from, you know, whatever it would be, edges of settlement or farmland. So the farmer wouldn't make big money on it. It would have to be, you know, it had to be sold at a certain price. And I'm not really sure how all that's worked out. But no, we need more initiatives, don't we, for people to be able to self-build it. So I think as we're still sitting about 8%, is it, of homes in the UK?
Is it that much?
I don't know what it is now, but I mean, I think it was about that.
Yeah. I think that the statistic is something incredible. Like, I think it's Germany. It's more like, it's more like sort of 60 or 80%. It's crazy.
I think Austria, isn't it, is 60 or 80 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Extraordinary. It goes to show you how, you know, it is just so super complicated in the UK, isn't it? You know, everybody just has to spend every bean that they've got on buying a bit of land. Yeah. And then can't afford to put a house on it.
Yes, exactly.
It is, you know, really genuinely scary. And then you go across to France and, you know, land sort of costs next to nothing. And
yeah, but you can only stay there for 90 days.
Yeah, you can have that. Yeah. Oh, dear.
I had a funny thought about that, actually. I was thinking, well, I don't know, is it funny? I'm sort of terrified because we're now in the European Championship finals, football. Didn't think we'd talk about sport on this podcast.
Wow, that's a departure.
Yeah, don't worry, everyone. It's not a big... But what I'm worried about is that if we win, are people going to herald it as like, yes, this is what Brexit does?
Oh, I see.
It sort of makes me want to support Italy, just in case.
I'm just so not a football fan. I don't do it. I just don't, you know. It was, you know, it's good. Like I said, I watched Extra Time last night.
Yeah.
And it was good. I mean, you've got to feel happy for them. And you know, and everybody loves it and whatever. I mean, it's good, isn't it? But yeah, to me, there's always, I don't know. It's I love, you know, the team element stuff and team sports. You know, it's great. I used to play rugby and stuff. And it's certainly playing stuff. I've never sort of, I don't really get it. It is the sort of that sort of weird. There's a bit of all that nationalism stuff mixed up in sport to some degree, isn't it? And how much of that is healthy or good or you know, because you know, pride's not a bad thing in and of itself, is it? And it's I don't know, but it's good. Gareth Southgate, what a great guy!
What a great guy!
You know,
he keeps just talking. He does these little TV spots where he's just talking about like respect and. Really good qualities.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't the sort of football louts that I grew up with.
I know.
What's happening?
Yeah. It's the, you know, definitely the sort of person who's great, just a great all-round ambassador for all those sorts of things and representing all that good stuff about it that you hope would be there.
Yeah. Anyway, that's enough sport chat from two people that know nothing about sport.
Really don't know anything at all.
I managed to have some sport banter with a quarry that I was ordering some sand from, and the guy went like, "Oh yeah, so what's going to happen in the football tonight?" And I just read The Guardian, and I was like, managed to regurgitate pretty much everything I knew about football. And he went, "Yeah, good point." So, blagged that one.
Oh, that's so funny. I remember talking to, when you talk to self-builders, and have you had this conversation where, I don't know, perhaps I do it as well. It's like when people mimic other people's accents.
Yeah.
I think I do that. And then you sort of then obviously risk offending people if they take it the wrong way, because some people think that's a bit weird, don't they?
Yeah.
But similarly with self-builders, they, I've heard people say, you know, they will like adopt a telephone manner appropriate to the supplier they're calling.
I definitely do that. I've spent a long time thinking that I'm a lesser person because of it, because what I think is I don't actually have a personality. I just like suck off someone else's personality sort of feed on their thing. But then someone else said recently that actually it's probably like an empathy thing, and that I'm a much higher level functioning empathetic human.
I think so. It's a communication skill, isn't it? It's like we're designed to sort of get on.
Yeah, it's sort of like the sort of physical mirroring that makes people feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Is it by imitating their accent and suddenly becoming cockney when I want to order some sand? Is that...
Yeah, lots of that going on.
So at the beginning, you said that there were four other buildings being built through Upstraw in Europe. What's happened with those? Has that all happened and been a good thing?
Yeah, they have. They're all a really diverse range of different stuff. An amazing sort of modular build over in Belgium. One in Germany. They've been great. I mean, basically, you just need to go and look at the if you put Upstraw into a search engine, then you can go to you can find the Interreg at the project site and see the details of all these different projects.
Great.
Yeah, and
I'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. And it's, you know, everything sort of coming up to sort of wrapping up now with the offshore project. And so the idea was that these buildings would be built, but then also alongside that, there are all these different bits of research that are happening for into all this really, really good straw bale stuff, which has resulted in, you know, lots of different things coming out. There's going to be, so the School of Natural Building have been working on a technical guide for straw building to help with, you know, building regulations and different things. That's imminent now, I think. So that'll be on the signposted from the SBUC website. And so, yeah, and various different things. So SBUC has taken on some work to translate in France, the RFCP in France have the this French professional rules document. And so there's been various work in the offshore project to translate different materials into English or into other languages so that they can be looked at. And SBUC has taken on the translation work for translating the French professional rules document. So so that will be coming out at some point soon, hopefully an English version of that, because that's an amazingly good book. And so an opportunity really to learn from all these different methods and ways that people build with straw in the rest of Europe.
Yeah. Was someone doing a straw bale wrap? Was that part of that project?
I don't know. I'm basically very not knowledgeable.
You've
about
been
this,
been
I?
Just in your little.
I've been in a Hastings bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've it has been really full on Hastings. It has been absolutely crazy trying to understand how it was all supposed to work.
Yeah. We don't have to suppose or find out.
You can probably tell that I'm trying to find this information on the internet. Just look at it. But yeah, I mean it's all there on the website, different stuff.
Great. All right. Well, people can look at that at their leisure. Mm. How have you been dealing with the sort of materials costs and the sort of the issues of supply chains and, you know, it seems to have died down at the moment, but there was that triple whammy of COVID, Brexit, and then the Suez Canal, and suddenly just, you know, wood fibre insulation didn't exist in the UK.
No. No, it's all been a bit strange, hasn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been okay. I mean, we've got, we haven't really been affected too much because Hastings was, I mean, it's, I think I worked out in the end, Hastings was supposed to be a 12-month project. And actually, out of 2 years, we've been on site for, I think, 15 months.
Okay.
So it's not, you know, it wasn't hugely over. We've really not been on site very much this year. The building was pretty much done sort of in the first week of February, I think. We were there for a bit of January and a little bit of February. But then lots of the external groundworks were being done by the council's contractors. And then we had to wait for a few little things to be done once the temperature had warmed up a bit again after winter. And yeah, lots of, you know, and then snagging and different things. So we literally have hardly been on site very much this year.
Yeah.
So it was something like about 15 months of work, I think, all told, everything pulled together. And yeah, so we haven't actually had to buy a lot of stuff this year.
Right.
So we've managed to avoid a lot of those things, because that certainly would have made things extra complicated.
Yeah, well, that's all to look forward to for your next project.
Yeah, absolutely. what do timber prices and all those different sorts of things. There's just, you know, too many complications, really. Mm. But it comes back to this idea, you know, I was talking about this project. I was, you know, skipping about here back to the Dorset Community Action, who were doing this thing with the, you know, the building local housing, and this idea that you could use. So we decided that basically timber could be a regional resource. So because you needed to have primary processing facilities and whatever, so down here in Dorset, then that might be Southampton or Exeter in Devon or Salisbury or whatever. So, interestingly, in a county like Dorset, other counties have actually done full-on sort of assessments of what timber they have. So obviously a lot of the forestry England's timber is a known quantity and resource, but so much of that timber sits in private estates, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And there's never been any survey of that timber or audit of that timber done within Dorset as a county, whereas different counties have assessed all of that timber as well. Yeah, so there's this idea that, you could just have everything really, really local. Mm. So obviously straw is, you know, the great thing about straw is that it exists pretty much everywhere, doesn't it, in the UK. There's easy access to that. You know, and all those other resources like, you know, earth and, you know, so clay and different things. You don't have to go too far to find those things.
Yeah.
So you could literally be building, you know, have a unit somewhere with local people building panel straw bale systems, you know, for local housing, literally.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that could be happening right now. There's no reason why those things couldn't be happening if there was the will there to do it. And so that would be a lovely thing to be able to see. So that's sort of one thing that's kicking around in my mind would be, how do we stimulate those sorts of things to happen?
Mm. That's good. I mean, I guess I'm thinking that the quantity and potentially quality of timber, say, in Somerset, is very different to what might grow in Scotland.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some areas would have, I guess, that, yeah, that's why we have like a UK trade, isn't it? Because of the sort of the highs and lows. Yeah. And so I guess would that mean if somewhere had just trees, no sort of agricultural byproducts, would that mean you just build log cabins, or would you look to expand? Yeah. I guess it's sort of about like how far is too far, and when you should just deal with what you've got. Or like that, I didn't really make any sense then, I don't think, but
well, it does, doesn't it? I mean, it's all these different questions about the whole, which I think, again, you know, for small companies it's difficult to get a handle on all of those things and how you make it all work. And, you know, as you say, the timber would be different, and as we know, you know, as your excellent podcast that you did with Dr. Judith Thornton, you know, even the straw itself, even the same variety of straw will vary depending on where you grow it and all these different sorts of things. And, you know.
Yeah. I had a big failure in the 2019 Hartwing build. I was looking at getting all our timber sawn and, you know, from good sort of UK stocks. And then it's like getting pushed further and further away from Suffolk. Suffolk doesn't have a huge amount of timber.
Mm.
And then I sort of was looking at, like, can we get it cut and transported from Scotland? And, you know, this is ridiculous. And I sort of, like, through a culmination of loads of different things, I just kind of went, aah! And we ended up just buying all of our timber from the local timber merchant. Mm-hmm. And then it came there stamped with, like, Slovakia or somewhere like that on it. It's like, oh,
yeah,
bugger, I have not done well. Just took my eye off the ball completely.
But it's so difficult, you know. It is difficult to get all those things right and to get it right all the time, you know. So things have to sort of align and be available to a degree, don't they? That the odds are sort of, you know, stacked against us to a point. I remember years ago, there seemed to be this thing where all of the timber yards, there was a good one up in North Dorset, there was a timber yard, and they always just had lots and lots of, so, you know, it was standard stock timber stuff, so I guess, you know, imported softwoods and different things, or, you know, redwood different. But at least, you know, it wasn't treated. So, you know, if you didn't want to use treated timber,
mm-hmm.
you know, we generally don't use treated if it doesn't need to be treated. Or
yeah, exactly. So, same, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and love to, you know, use local timber suppliers. But there was a yard, you know, there that if you wanted stuff or needed to top up stuff, they had any. But it seemed to go through this thing where all of the timber suppliers just decided that it was too much hassle to have untreated wood. And because basically people would just have treated. And so, you know, it was 10% more, but, you know, they needed half the space to store the timber.
Yeah. I think I've heard that, you can use a lower grade of wood if you treat it. So actually you're using the sort of cheaper, nastier bits with a treatment on it. Because quite often you find that untreated is more expensive than treated.
Oh, and really?
Yeah, I've been finding that. I wondered if that's just a scale thing.
I don't know. This whole thing about the that's clearly a difficult thing, isn't it? When you, that whole grading thing with timber, you know, if it's going to be specified for a purpose, you need a certain standard of timber to be able to work with. And so it's, that's another thing that, you know, can be a bit difficult trying to use local suppliers, isn't it? It's how do those elements work and fit in with what you're trying to do? But, you know, yeah, I mean, normally, you know, with a bit of effort, again, it depends how long. That's the good thing about, you know, design and build, isn't it, really, is that you've got those things more under your control as a company to be able to get everything in a row, to get those things sorted out.
Yes.
But yes, sometimes it just doesn't work.
Well, and there's always compromises, isn't there? I'm having to deal with the compromises. Do you know that I'm building a tiny house?
I do. It's very exciting. It looks brilliant.
Well, yes, thank you. I'm about to actually, when I get home, I'm about to take it all apart because I want to do the base a bit better.
Oh, no.
But I think it's fine. I think the agonizing few days of deciding to take it apart was worse than actually spending like a few hours unscrewing things and then screwing it back together different. So,
yeah. Well, fair enough. I mean, that's it. That's it's worth getting things right, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, just don't know all the answers. You've got to do things and, you know, but that's a part of the fun of doing that. That's a lovely project because part of the fun of that surely is just being able to not make it up as you go along, obviously.
No, well, there's things involved. Where, so I've half-lapped all of my noggins because
I saw that.
I'm my own client. And yeah, I can spend two extra days putting noggins in. It's stronger and it's better and it's, you know.
Yeah, that looked brilliant.
Yeah, I've been enjoying sort of geeking out like that. And certainly stuff like not where in conventional framing, if you're sort of joining two bits of wood end to end, then you just join them and then slap another bit of timber like over the join.
Like an overlap. Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's just an extra area of my tiny house where there isn't any insulation. So I've been doing these elaborate scarf joints where I've like ripped down a meter of one bit and a meter of another and sliding them together, glue and screw.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the big thing with that is surely, you know, the weight as well, isn't it? So you're trying to keep it as light as possible because that's going to stack up really quickly.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. I think probably regular listeners to this podcast are sick of me talking about the weight. But it's the biggest source of compromise that I've ever had to deal with in a sort of building because I want a wood shingle roof. Well, if you have a wood shingle roof, that's an extra 100 kilograms.
Wow.
Than
wood
a metal
is
roof.
Heavy.
And it's and it's like, well, that, and then I sort of said it to a supplier I was talking to on the phone and I said, well, yeah, I can't go for that because of weight. And they went, well, it's not very much, is it? It's like, it's not very much. But then when you add up all the other different weights, that was a lovely tangent into me talking about my tiny house again.
Oh, it is lovely. I'm enjoying looking at the photos of that. Yeah, I think that's great. I'm going to have to come and visit you.
Yes, please do. That'd be really lovely. What is it I wanted to talk to you about? Oh, yeah, I'm looking at the list. It's the first time I've looked at the list. I was just wondering, because you're in a prized position, being one of the SBUK board of directors. Is that where you are?
I'm the treasurer.
Oh,
For SBUK.
Okay, but you're part of the people that make the decisions.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, obviously, SBUK's, you know, run by and for its members. We've had some good member engagement this year with different things. Yeah, and we've got this, ESBG, so the European Straw Belt Gathering.
When is that?
That event, that's coming at the end of, that's happening at the end of July, so July 31st, there will be some stuff going on. So it's literally in the process of being sort of published in the next week or so, I think.
Lovely.
There's going to be an event, so we'll have some sessions happening on Saturday the 31st of July. Talking about UK stuff, and then in the evening there will be a session with everyone else in Europe coming together and doing some presentations across the board for everybody to see. It's obviously been interesting, you know, trying to with COVID, trying to make the European Straw Bubble Gathering work this year.
Yeah, because normally it's hosted by one of the member countries, isn't it?
Yeah, so just one specific country. So the suggestion was that this year everybody would just sort of do their own thing, potentially with physical events if they could, or tours or different things. And you know, yeah. So it's challenging with obviously the Straw Bear Building UK is a tiny group. I think we've got about 35 members.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this obviously it would be lovely to grow that number. You know, doesn't cost that much to join SBUC. It would be lovely to have more input and different things, and it's just trying to reach that sort of critical mass, isn't it, of trying to being able to make organizations like that work, because it's trying to do some good stuff. And again, it will be interesting to see what happens with this outputs of the Upshaw project. So there's some great research there that hopefully SBUC can sort of get their teeth into and run with.
Yeah,
and all the great stuff that's going on with I think on the Thursday or Friday before that, the ACAN, you know, the Arctic Climate Action Network, they're doing a straw focused event as well.
Brilliant.
And it's great to see what they're doing.
Yeah, they're really pushing the natural materials thing, aren't they?
Yeah, so they've just recently, just last week, they did a session with different natural materials, and they'll be doing sort of focused ones. And so the first one that they're doing, the next one with the focus, will be straw.
Yeah.
Just before the ESBG event. Yeah, it's nice to feel that there's some. I think with SBUC, it's been, you know, trying to stand up for straw in the UK is not necessarily an easy thing to do. Engaging with all those different ways to try and promote that, you know, this year we've sort of engaged with, you know, government, you know, calls for evidence and different things, you know, all those things that have happened. It's difficult to get change, isn't it? The change that we want to see, to be able to build with the straw and other natural materials, bio-based stuff.
Yeah. Especially when we're up against the, you know, all the other companies that have whole departments to deal with this sort of stuff. There's some just some plucky individuals like who are worked ragged coming home at the end of the day and then trying to get the good word out there.
Yeah. I really should have done some prep for this, shouldn't I?
No, not at all. This is perfect. Serious
question, and I'm like, I don't know. Man. I don't know what's going on.
It's all good. Yeah, people can look up their own answers if they want. I just want to catch up with my mate.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
All right. Thank you, Phil. That was excellent. I very, very much enjoyed that conversation. Wanted to say there's a bit in there where we talked about straw thatch. Now, I think a lot of people will be of the assumption that reed is the true material that was like the traditional thatch. So from my good friend Alan Jones, he is a thatcher. And I've been trying to get him on the podcast for, well, since it began. I think he's a little bit shy, but he has a wealth of knowledge on thatching. And he has told me that, so straw was the original thatch material. And actually reed is an invasive species, and we wouldn't have had it, you know, a few hundred years ago. So there's a little exciting bit of info for you. Store that in your brain. Might win you a pub quiz or something. Oh, and the other thing I want to say, that stat that Phil and I were failing to recall. So Austria has more than 80% of its homes are self-built. Now, I don't think that is a true like-for-like comparison, as in those aren't people building their own homes, you know, getting a saw around, hammering nails and stuff. Yeah, it's a slightly skewed stat. But still, it's pretty special, isn't it? We are just at the bottom of the table, below USA. USA is on 40%, UK 10%. So Belgium, Italy, Sweden, Norway, Germany, France, all around the 60% mark. So yes, we really don't have that same sort of culture, do we? Hopefully we can change that, because I think if people were given the opportunity to build their own homes, they would want to do it right. Yeah, I think that's all I've got to say. I'm obviously pretty tired and don't think I'm really making any sense. Has there been a podcast yet when I haven't said that I'm really tired? Anyway, as soon as this little push to get the build watertight is done, I'm going to slow down a little bit. I'm going to make some spoons. I'm going to finish my compost loo. Are these things you need to know? Probably not. Enjoy. Thanks for listening. See you next time. If you enter the Patreon competition, best of luck. I will be revealing the winner and the next episode in 2 weeks. All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.